Campus FM presents Talking Heads Season 3, brought to you by students of the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change.
Hello and welcome back to Talking at Season 3. My name is Ngoc from Vietnam. I am your host for today. And co-hosting the show with me today is my very good friend, Zach.
Thank you, Ngoc. And hello, everyone. My name is Zakaria, and I'm from Georgia, and I'm a student of adult education for social change as well.
Today, we're going to talk about mental health and learning. And we have with us in the studio today our very wonderful friends from the Master Program in Adult Education for Social Change, Angela, Milton, and Anya.
Hi, this is Milton.
Hi, this is Angela from Colombia.
This is Anya from the U.S.
Hawaii.
Yeah.
Thank you for being in the studio with us today, friends. Thank you for agreeing to be a part of the show.
So, as you know, our topic for today's discussion is mental health and learning. And my first question is about the students' mental health. Today, the number of people with mental health problems are increasing dramatically, and students are not exception. For instance, Guardian reports that one out of three students have some kind of issues related to depression, anxiety, etc. So I have a first question for you. As a psychologist and as an international student, what do you think, what makes students vulnerable to mental health issues?
Okay, in the psychological field, there will be different approaches. But for example, if we consider that being an international student is a situation that challenges our personal and social resources, that's why we are vulnerable to develop any mental health issue or mental disorder. Being an international student challenges us in terms of the fact that we need to move to a different city or country. So we encounter situations such as finding accommodation, understanding how everything works. In our case, for example, including myself, I'm not an English native speaker. So for us, and as well as for many of my colleagues, it has been a challenge in terms both of the social life and the academic life, because of course it takes more time for you to complete any assignment, and also in terms of socializing, because it's difficult sometimes to understand certain accents, or of course the academic and the informal jargon is very different. Well, additionally, if you are in a different country, difference in time frames makes you pose a threat in terms of maintaining your social network. For example, long-distance relationships, it's also difficult to talk about with your relatives in general. But it includes as well the financial part. Either if your financial status, it's not enough to deal with all the requirements of studying internationally, or also because of the fact that you may not have the abilities of planning a budget, of managing your economic resources. Mm-hmm. So for these terms, mm-hmm. It could be possible to face any of these situations.
Yes, that must be challenging, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anya, you're also an international student, but given that you're a native speaker, do you think that you face the same issue as Angela, or how do you feel? Like personal, what are your personal experiences?
Definitely all of what Angela brought up makes sense and is completely valid, and I'll just maybe add on that, but definitely long-distance relationships. I'm in one myself. And also as someone who is very anxious and has had spells and lapses of depression, I found it particularly difficult to access mental health services as a student abroad. And this isn't to say that mental health services are readily available for students anywhere, because I still don't think they are in a lot of cases, and I still don't think mental health is considered in a lot of cases, but I think it can be even more difficult as an international student because oftentimes you're put on these wait lists, and then by the time you get an appointment, the time is almost up. So definitely that's something to consider as well.
I see, yeah.
That's a really big issue, accessibility to the psychological services. And at the same time, when I was reviewing the literature, I noticed that some scholars argue that the mental health problems are not rising, but visibility is increasing. The stigma about mental health issues is shaken more or less, and more people are asking for professional help. What do you think about it, Milton?
That's a really good question. Basically, are mental health problems increasing, or is the visibility of them increasing? And I don't think there's a simple yes or no answer to it. I think both visibility of it is increasing. I think it's becoming destigmatized, which is excellent, because people who have these mental issues are finally going to get the help that they need. But I also don't think that this means that mental health problems are increasing. I think it's more about the type of mental health problems that are increasing. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in the past, when we had this paradigm shift from behaviorism, when it changed to more a focus on the mind and how the mind's mechanisms, the issues at that time were more along the lines of hysteria and like sexual repression. While nowadays I would say that the biggest issues would be more along the lines of depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it makes sense if you look out at the world. You know, it makes sense that depression and anxiety are the mental health problems that everybody is facing nowadays. So I would say that visibility is increasing. I wouldn't say that mental health problems just in general are increasing. I would just say it's the different types of it. Some types are becoming more common than other types of mental health problems.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
This is just an open table question. What would you say to the claim that mental health is not so much as an issue as one of overdiagnosis, or mental health issues being overdiagnosed?
I think it can also maybe depend on the person, because for some people it is very helpful to have a diagnosis and to gain support from that and to kind of recognize that they're normal, but it can also do the opposite. I think it can also make someone feel like they'll never be able to function in the world, like they're not, quote, normal, because I've met both of them. What do you think, Angela?
But I think that in some aspects it is overdiagnosed. For example, in the case of primary education, it certainly is. Mm-hmm. Lots of children has been wrongly diagnosed with attention deficits.
ADHD.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And actually, regarding the new edition of the DSM, which is the Manual for Diagnosing Mental Health Disorders, there's a big critique towards it, because it has been sponsored by a lot of pharmaceutical companies. Mm-hmm. So it also has a lot to deal with what are the benefits of diagnosing people with mental health disorders.
I think overdiagnosis is as much a problem as underdiagnosis, because overdiagnosis, mental health has many different treatments. Mm-hmm. Sometimes therapy is enough, sometimes exercise is enough, but sometimes neither one of these is enough, and specific medical medicine, actual pills, are necessary. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people who don't need these pills are getting these pills, and it is affecting them negatively.
Yeah.
And people who actually do need these pills, they're not getting them. So I think it's a process. I think it is improving. I'm glad that as time goes on, as we get rid of the shame of like mental health, people are getting the help that they need.
I see. Yeah. So the problems come from both sides, either being overdiagnosed or underdiagnosed.
Definitely.
Regardless, the stigma is still present. So maybe we achieved some progress in the previous, you know, years, but personally, I know many people who are struggling with mental health issues, but still are not able to overcome their personal challenges to seek professional help. Angela, why do you think it is stigmatized? Why are we ashamed to speak about our mental health issue? After all, it is an aspect of us that is that needs to be taken care of just as much as our physical health.
Well, I think this is a really complex issue, and there are a lot of factors related, associated with it. First is, of course, the historic tradition of practices regarding mental health. Like, we cannot deny that it was not until the third edition of the manual that I mentioned, DSM, that homosexuality was taken out from being considered a mental health disorder. So that's the first step.
Mm-hmm.
Psychiatry and psychology have been to some extent a practice of social repression and social control.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely it has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. Well, additionally, it's a cultural aspect. Mm-hmm. For example, for indigenous groups, and maybe Anya can speak a bit more about it, for indigenous groups, people with hallucinations are considered as having a special gift,
mm-hmm.
whereas in Western cultures, the fact that you're having hallucinations means that you have schizophrenia. Another aspect is, of course, social desirability, because if you request for health service and if you are considered to have any specific type of diagnosis, that means that you are going to have more chances of being socially excluded. For example, I know that there are in some interviews and some process of recruitment, they ask you if you have any particular type of mental health. Why? Because, of course, the fact that you have it will increase the chances that you may need to be absent for your job for different reasons. Additionally, there are structural factors. For example, the World Health Organization has reported that more than 40% of countries have no mental health policy.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, even the government hasn't acknowledged the importance of mental health. But it's also a matter of the individualistic culture that we have associated with neoliberalism, and also the fact that you need to show yourself as a marketable person.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, acknowledging that you have a mental health disorder or that you are facing to any type of challenge, of course, make you less desirable.
Mm-hmm. Wow. All right, I see. So what I'm taking from this is that mental health is perceived differently in different contexts and cultures, but as a general trend, as the world is becoming more like interconnected and neoliberalism is on the rise, this trend is going into that direction, as you mentioned, the marketability of individuals. What do you have to say to that, Milton?
Well, I think Angela did an amazing job of just saying almost everything about it. I think the only thing that I would add is we are moving towards a more individualistic, I feel like we're moving kind of towards a more individualistic culture where individual strength, not communal strength, is valued like above everything else. And so when you have this mental health problem, when you have mental health illnesses, there's the idea that, oh, well, you just be happy, just be better, get better. And it kind of creates this issue that you become ashamed of your own mental health problems without realizing that, you know, it's a mental health problem that you can't just, yeah, okay, I'll be better, you know, I'll just get better. If somebody tells you be happy, you can't just be happy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the only thing that I would add.
Mm-hmm. So it's like we're talking about a more systematic problem here, the
exactly.
issue, and institutions in general. I think it's time for a break now. After the break, we'll get back into the topic where we'll be talking more about systematic and institutional issues
mm-hmm.
when it comes to dealing with mental health.
This is Talking Heads Season 3, brought to you by the third cohort of the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change.
So before the break, we talked about the systematic problems about the mental health, and we touched very important issue about the relationship between neoliberalism, capitalism, and mental health. So on this note, I want to say that the anxiety and depressions are very much linked to the lower social classes and the lower economic status. For instance, student debt, poverty, uncertainty about jobs and future makes people anxious, right? Mm-hmm. At this point, we can even say that the normal condition of poor families can be categorized as illness at some point because they have this anxiety. Maybe we are individualizing social problems and we are dealing with mental health issues instead of dealing with social inequality and precarious way of living. Milton, what's your opinion about it? Is it a medicalization of poverty at some point?
Well, I think that's also one of the reasons why mental health problems are being destigmatized, which is an excellent thing. We are finally realizing that no, it's not just your individual actions that determine what happens to you. It's also the system that you are in that really can affect your fate. And just look at, for example, the relationship between unemployment, anxiety, and depression. Mm-hmm. It's been all but proven that when somebody is unemployed, their levels of depression and anxiety definitely go up. Research has also shown that the quality of the job that a person has definitely has a relationship with depression and anxiety in this person. And, you know, these things, whether you can find a job or not, the quality of your job or not, it's not just due to yourself as an individual. It's due to the market. It's due to institutions. It's due to the government. It's due to so many things that are out of our control. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it feels very hopeless, and this hopelessness right. can translate into anxiety and depression.
The issue with mental health and how we overcome this issue are, to some extent, issues of the system and of institutions. So let me bring it back a little bit to our context of education and learning here. What do you think are the specific measures that educational institutions can take to support students with mental health issues, and us as adult educators, what can we do to make learning environment less stressful for students? Anila?
I think Bella has a lot to say on that field with her principles about adult education, particularly focusing on adult education needs and on developing sound relationships. Why? Because when you address adult learners' needs, that means that they are going to have meaningful learning experiences that are going to contribute to their self-development, either professionally or in their life. And in terms of sound relationships, because it has been proven that resilience is not only a factor that individuals have themselves, but it's also an aspect that can be developed when you have a proper context of where relationships are nurturing mm-hmm. and when they contribute to each other.
Mm-hmm. I see. I guess what I'm getting at it here is what do you think are the specific measures that institutions can take to support students with mental health issues?
Okay, yeah. What I was saying was in terms of adult educators, mm-hmm. in terms of institutions, first of all, definitely acknowledge that every institution needs to consider mental health as one of their priorities. They need to have a policy for mental health. And then raising the awareness in all the educators, no matter if they are psychologists or if they aren't. One thing that they could promote is Like in the case that educators notice that something's happening, they could refer the student to the mental health services.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What do you think, Anya?
Yeah, definitely agree with you. But I also think it goes, you kind of mentioned this, but it goes along with how we as educators, and I'm not just talking about in like a higher education environment, any education environment, how we interact with learners and how we show support to learners can be huge. So mm-hmm. in a lot of cases, I think people don't feel comfortable being vulnerable or at least telling the educator that there's something going on. So we need to be more supportive, I think, as educators in any context.
Mm-hmm. So as educators, we need to raise awareness of mental health issues yeah. among ourselves.
And maybe just
as well.
Even start treating each other more like people. Of course, we can't be counselors,
mm-hmm.
but just talk to someone, see how they're doing, mm-hmm. make a comfortable space, and know where the mental health services are so that you can refer them. And
yeah, it's definitely not only about the content. It's about the way you deliver your session and the way mm-hmm. you build your relationship with your students.
Yeah, and just, you know, knowing that, you know, we as adult educators, we're people, and the people who we deal with, they're also people, you know, making this human connection with them.
That's so true. And we spoke a little bit about the educator's perspective, but I have a question on learner's perspective. You, as international learners, how do you deal with these issues? How do you make sure that you have a good mental health state? What you are doing for...
I don't deal with them.
I've started dealing with them, so I can recommend a couple things. Definitely exercise. Yoga is great for mindfulness, for breathing. I've also started, and it's very helpful, this kind of journaling, and it's like a better self-journaling, and you basically, it's actually from this Instagram girl called The Holistic Psychologist, mm-hmm. but you kind of choose a goal every day, and then you choose a monthly goal for something that you want to better with yourself, and you write like a daily affirmation each day, and it can seem a bit silly, but it's kind of tricking your, or convincing your subconscious to think these things and to work on these self goals that you would have a hard time with.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I found that really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, another aspect is, it's kind of related to what you mentioned about the individualistic perspective, and it's considering that it is okay to not be able to cope with everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that means asking for help. Like if it is not for professional help because you don't have the access, like you definitely don't have the access, then think on your social network. Like, is your social network enough? Do you need to widen your social network, or do you need to get close to them? And with social network, I don't mean Facebook, Instagram. I mean the people that it's part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and additionally, and that's related with what Anya was saying, if you have noticed that your coping strategies are not good enough, then you can always develop them.
Mm-hmm.
And well, finally, think about, like, we all in our lives have overcome to different challenges. So it's a matter also of remembering those challenges that we overcome and thinking, what did we do that was successful that time, and what of that can be done now?
Mm-hmm.
Can I just add, I think it's so important to remember, because I've forgotten this before, and I think this is when it's hardest, but to remember that you do somehow have the ability to heal and to change if that's what you want, and that can be so difficult sometimes, but I think recognizing that is...
Great point.
That's the first step, definitely. If you don't consider yourself, like if you don't consider that you have the ability to change, you're going to be stuck there forever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then just to conclude a little bit, I would ask a final question, which is related to the face-to-face interactions and the importance of the social networks. But in particular, how can we support each other? How can we support a person if we notice that someone has a difficult time in his or her life?
I have a friend who recently, his sister had like very serious mental health problems. And she needed to go to a psychiatrist. And he said, you know, looking what has happened to my sister, I realized that I also need to go to a psychologist. And I know it may sound like a little unorthodox, but I think one of the, like a nice way to support a friend is just go with him or her to the psychologist and both of you set up an appointment, one for you and one for him or her.
Mm-hmm.
And both of you go together to deal with and mental health, because we might be focusing today more on mental health problems, mental health illnesses, mm-hmm. depression, anxiety, but the truth is we all have mental health. We all have a mind that we all need to take care of, sort of like how our bodies require a healthy diet. Mm-hmm. Our minds require probably a little bit of guidance from a professional. So mm-hmm. we should never be ashamed of going to a psychologist or a psychiatrist mm-hmm. For this guidance.
So like you need like regular physical health checkup. You also need a regular mental health checkup.
Definitely.
Well, another aspect is just let people know that you are there. Like sometimes, like even if you are not the closest friends, just something like, I've noticed that this last week you have been a bit down. How is everything going? It will create an opportunity for the other people to talk about what is happening in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Angela. We should let people in our lives know that we support them.
Mm-hmm. Just check in.
Yeah.
I think that's all the questions that we have for you today. Once again, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show with us. That was a wonderful, wonderful conversation that we just had. Thank you so much. And thank you to you, our listeners, for tuning in. We hope that you learned as much as Zach and I did.
If you are interested in finding out more about the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change, please visit our website at www.gla.ac.uk. To follow the journey of the third cohort of iMask, visit our blog imask/unmasked.squarespace.com. Thank you and wish you all good mental health and peace of mind.